This is lecture 31. We were talking about general constraint systems. In particular, going to focus on second class constraints pretty soon. And we had gotten to a formula for this particular quantity. Evolution within the physical Hilbert space, limit epsilon to zero, n to infinity, etc., m double prime, m prime, I'll remind you what they were, product L equals zero to capital N, the double angle states 1 minus I epsilon H bar PLQL double angle product L equals 1 to N PLQL E PL, so expectation value of the projection operator DPL DQL divided by 2 pi h bar. And I said this was maybe I actually put those together and this broken into two terms, but that was basically the best formula should you want to take it to a computer. On the other hand, let's do our formal interchange. Because now these are unit vectors, we can play the same kind of tricks that we did before. And that's going to look like script M for the 2 pi h's. And then we have e to the I by h bar integral I double angle PQ derivative. We have a bra and a derivative and a ket minus double angle P and Q, H, P and Q. Again, what we're writing down in the exponent is the form it takes for continuous differentiable histories. Integral dt with some kind of product over the time steps. P, Q, E, P, Q, so that's a weighted form for the measure dP of T, dQ of T, etc. Okay. And what were the double angles again? The double angle states, were the projection operator on the usual coherent states, but then normalized to become unit vectors. And M was equal to the norm of the of the projection operator on one of those states. So if I have an M prime, then that's for P prime, Q prime, M double prime is for P double, Q double. Okay, so I want to pass from the double angle states to the single angle states. So I'm going to now take this final formula here in our formal continuum limit and re-express that in terms of single angle states. And that would be the final form we want to get it in. So this is again equal. This will be what we might call star circle. And that's our quantity of interest again. So that's too high for me to reach. Let me bring it down a little bit. So that's going to be script M, e the I by h bar, I Actually, I need another H bar here. Here. Not very critical, but nevertheless. Then we have PQ E d by dt E PQ and divide by PQ single E PQ. That is, after a little moment's thought on your part, what you get from this kinematic part from the double angle term. More obvious is what the Hamiltonian term becomes. That is PQ E Hamiltonian E again, coherent state PQ, divided by PQ E PQ. End of expression integral dt. And then finally our product over our measures, PQ E PQ dP dQ. This is a very interesting expression, I believe, because this covers everything we've done before as well. For example, if E were unity, if there were no constraints, or if I chose constraints which were identically zero, so they didn't put any restrictions on things, then when E is unity, then this formula reduces back to our previous formal formula. Take E away from here, these are unit vectors, so that drops out. Take E away from here, that's our original definition of the Hamiltonian, classical Hamiltonian. E away from here, that's unit vector. E away from here, that's our original expression. E away from here, and that becomes a unity, and we're done with that. So this is a very general formula that applies for quite a broad variety of projection operators. And we will soon give ourselves an example of this very formula. Maybe we should do that right now. Let's do that right now. I want to develop one more expression for this quantity as well, but perhaps doing our example now is not such a bad idea. So let's do that. Simple example again. Classical theory. We have a PQ dot minus some classical Hamiltonian. I'm going to put on two constraints. I'm going to say that P should be 1 and that Q should be 2. So, again, I've taken my original phase space variables P and Q and effectively forced them to be a single point on our constraint hypersurface where P should be equal to 1 and Q should be equal to 2. This is a second class system. Second class system is not good for Dirac, it's not good for Fadeyev-Popov, and we'll see how it fits into this prescription. Let me just do the equations of motion to make you happy. We'll vary the P here. So that's Q dot is partial H with respect to P for sure. Then we vary the P, so we pick up a plus a lambda, vary the Q, we get a P dot is minus dH dQ minus mu. And in addition, we're told that P should equal 1 and Q should equal 2. If P equals 1 and Q equal 2, then the time derivatives of those have to vanish. And so that means that if I evaluate this expression at the point 1, 2, P equals 1, Q equals 2, dP, then that tells me what the lambda is. Lambda should be just the negative of that particular quantity. Likewise, for this mu situation, we have dH dQ, then evaluate that expression at 1, 2 minus mu, and that should sum up to 0, and that tells us exactly what the mu should be. So the lambda and the mu are fixed. That makes it a second class system. not a very profound example, but example nonetheless. What is our projection operator? Our projection operator, as you remember, our prescription is to take the quantum constraints, which will then be P minus 1, square it. The second constraint is Q minus 2, square it, add those together, let them to be less than or equal to some particular parameter, delta squared of H bar, we called it in general. But here, we're clever enough to know what the parameter should be. We'll make it H bar itself. This is nothing but a harmonic oscillator where the origins have been shifted. I've moved it to the center of position in 2 and the center of momentum is place 1.
How did you know what H bar there?
Well, because we know that P squared plus, the question was, how do we know to put H bar there? P squared plus Q squared divided by 2 is the harmonic oscillator. The spectrum of that begins at H bar over 2, so that is greater than that. Take away the 2, and that becomes that, and it doesn't, the shift doesn't matter because that's a unitary transformation. Okay, now, this is a projection onto the ground state of that system. That ground state is a harmonic oscillator ground state shifted. And that is exactly what the coherent states do. They shift it to the place 1, comma 2, where I've now labeled for P and Q, I've set the P equal to 1 and the Q equal to 2. And that, as a back-to-back bracket, is indeed the projection operator of interest to us, a one-dimensional projection operator. So that is our E. Let us take our answer, which we know the answer we want to be, which is P double prime, Q double prime, E to the minus I, E Hamiltonian operator, E capital T divided by H bar, E P prime, Q prime. That is the quantity we are calculating. Let's do it first this way, and then second, we'll calculate it by means of the path integral. So all I do is put in my projection operator, that is P double Q double 1 comma 2, 1 comma 2 looking now to the right. I have my operator upstairs, e to the minus I, 1 comma 2, H, 1 comma 2, 1 comma 2, capital T divided by H bar. Downstairs, I have the same stuff again, 1, comma 2, and 1, comma 2, P prime, Q prime. Now, all this stuff in the middle is really just a number. So the answer then is
John,
really P double.
Excuse me, please.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, I can't read from the back row. What's in the exponent of the...
It's this projection.
Just the projector?
That's the projection operator. H, that's again the projection operator.
Thanks.
Capital T divided by H bar. But since this is a one-dimensional situation, this 1-2 and that 1-2 don't play any role. So it's really e to the minus I, 1 comma 2 H, 1 comma 2, again, bra and ket, capital T divided by H bar, and then we have 1 comma 2 P prime Q prime as our final answer. And just to do it one more time, we have already agreed that we call this kind of expression the classical Hamiltonian of P and Q, but the P and Q here are particularly chosen numerical values. So that is the classical Hamiltonian at the point 1 and 2 times capital T for time, H bar, 1 comma 2, P prime, Q prime. So this is the answer I claim, or this above it is the answer that we are trying to get for this particular elementary example of a second class system that we want to get also from our path integral. Any questions about that? Okay, so while the formula is on the board, let me use it. So we have separate ingredients to talk about. Let's take this ingredient first, which is going to be the simplest. Take the Hamiltonian ingredient. So that is P comma Q E H E P comma Q expectation value then divided by P comma Q projection operator and PQ again. That is equal to PQ 1 comma 2, 1 comma 2 on H, 1 comma 2, 1 comma 2 on PQ again, divide by PQ 1 comma 2, 1 comma 2, PQ. Well, we get cancellation because these are one-dimensional. These are all new simple factors. That cancels with that. That cancels with that. And so my answer for that is simply 1 comma 2, H, 1 comma 2, or, again, straight H, classical H, of the arguments P equal 1, coordinate Q equals 2. This is independent of any P's and Q's. So whatever the integrations are going to do for us, they are not going to have any varying weight from that, because that numerical value will be constant. Let's look at the second item to talk about. That is P comma Q 1 comma 2, 1 comma 2 acting on d by dt, 1 comma 2, 1 comma 2 PQ divide by PQ 1 comma 2, 1 comma 2 PQ. Now there's an I and an H bar. And we know that this quantity is pure imaginary. It came from this quantity, double angle, which is the derivative of unit vectors. And in the Hilbert space, we know that the derivative of unit vectors together, of course, will be identically zero because that product is one. The derivative of that is one. That means that this term plus the opposite term, a derivative acting in the opposite direction, if you will permit me, adds up to zero. But this is nothing more than the complex conjugation of this expression because it puts the derivative on the left-hand side instead of the right-hand side. So this is quantity plus its complex conjugate equals zero. Therefore, quantity must be pure imaginary. Let me make my life a little bit simpler with regard to that by recognizing that this part of it will be pure imaginary. That's called x plus I, y, let us say. I'm interested in the y coefficient. I times I will be minus. So this is equivalent to saying it is minus h bar times the imaginary part of my quotient. So now I go again back to this. These two terms will cancel immediately. Let me keep that straight away. This 1, 2 is a vector with 1, 2 here that has nothing to do with the time derivative. The time derivative acts over here. So that just is a numerical factor. And so what I get now is imaginary part of the time derivative of 1, 2 PQ divide by the same expression, like that. And that is equal to, I'll do it up here, minus h bar, imaginary part, d by dt of the natural logarithm of 1 comma 2 p comma q. That makes it a total derivative. And a total derivative in this time integral here is easily evaluated.
So I have minus h bar times imaginary times integral d by dt of natural log of 1 comma 2 p comma q dt. Well, total derivative means it's equal to minus h bar imaginary times the natural log, the integrand evaluated at the upper limit, double prime, and the lower limit, single prime. That is minus h bar imaginary of natural log of 1 comma 2 p double q double plus h bar imaginary natural log of 1 comma 2 p prime q.
So let's put what we've achieved so far all together. This term has become an e to the minus h1 comma 2. We'll integrate that dt. We'll take the I and the h bar with it, so there's an I over h bar. That's, of course, going to be capital T times that because it doesn't depend on anything. Then what we have left is this expression, I divide by h bar. Well, that will kill this h bar, so that's fine. I times minus imaginary natural log 1 comma 2 p double q double plus imaginary natural log 1 comma 2 p prime q prime. So that's kind of goes with that.
That's the total integrand. And it does not depend on any of them, depend any longer on the path history. What was the function p of t and q of t? This only depends on the end points, and this doesn't depend on those things at all. So we have to deal with the integral still, but there's nothing to integrate, there's no weight to that integral from our integrand. So we have to just look at this situation, product t, pq, now I'll put in what that e is, that's 1 comma 2, 1 comma 2, pq, dp, dq, and I'll bring in my m here, m is my formal measure, which was from our 2 pi h bars. Well, this is supposed to happen for every moment of time. But if I turn it around, you'll see I'm just moving one complex factor in front of the other. Product over T. This is nothing but the resolution of unity, which would then evaluate the overlap of the bra with the ket. But they are unit vectors. It's just asking for the length of that. That length is 1. So that whole integral is the number 1. So this is our entire answer, except for the m prime and m double prime, which has kind of gotten lost in the shuffle here. You remember those. Let me go back to this part of the board and restore that. We have an m double prime, an m prime, an e to the I minus imaginary natural log 1 comma 2 p double q double plus I imaginary natural log 1 comma 2 p prime q prime minus I h
1, 2, straight h, 1, 2, capital T divided by h bar. That's our answer. Does that answer look exactly like what we had before?
Over here? Well, not quite.
But we can make it that way. All we have to do is observe what is m prime. M prime is the length of the vector E acting on the coherent state P prime Q prime. That, well, we know what our E is, so that is the length of the vector 1, comma 2, overlap 1, 2, P prime, Q prime. 1, comma 2 is a unit vector, and this is a complex multiplier. So I get out of that the magnitude of the number 1, 2, PQ overlap, the magnitude. So I put that up here with the magnitude. If this is the magnitude, 1, comma 2, PQ, prime, prime, I join that magnitude with this term, that is nothing but the phase of that expression. The logarithm of that expression, taking its imaginary part, is the true phase. For example, if A is e to the I phi, if I take the logarithm, and this is real, I take the logarithm of that, I'm going to have an I phi plus something real, I take the imaginary part of that, and that gives me the phase. So restoring this term and that term together gives me exactly the expression, complex expression like that. And the other one is simply the complex conjugation for the other end of the story. And we have won our entire expression as advertised. Okay. Now I want to get yet one other formula for circle star, our quantity of interest today. I'm going to erase this formula in the middle, which we've just made heavy use of. You see, there were no Lagrange multipliers in that formula. That formula was the effective result of integrating out the Lagrange multipliers. Let us derive a formula involving Lagrange multipliers. When we talked about the first class constraints, I focused on a particular projection operator, which was given by a compact group. It had coordinates C alpha, generators capital Phi alpha, which were our constraints, and an invariant measure on the group. That was one particular choice, very convenient for the first class system. However, if I change the group, I'm very likely to change the measure down here. Maybe even if I have the same number of parameters here, if I have 7 parameters and I have a different group with those 7 parameters, I may have a very different measure down here. I would like to find a universal prescription to make or to create E, which was independent of what particular constraints we were talking about. For example, if I change groups, then I'm talking about a different set of generators, therefore a different set of constraints. I would therefore change that. I don't want that. I want to have one universal prescription to make my E, and my E, again, is of the kind where the sum of the constraints squared is going to be less than some constant, typically depending on h bar. So we're going to do that and then use that in our master formula for a general constraint system involving the Lagrange multipliers. Okay.
John, do you have any a priori reason to believe that such a problem, or such a prescription exists, or are you going to prove the existence of construction?
I'm going to give it to you. It was unexpected to me at first, but I was able to find it for you. There may be more than one, but I'm only interested in one. So what I'm going to give you is the following prescription. To make a projection operator, which does exactly what we're talking about here, by means of an integral over perhaps an h-bar, if we want, an integral upstairs, lambda alpha of t, phi alpha dt, and I have a measure I will call r of lambda.
Fixed measure r, the only thing this measure will depend on of interest to us at the end is on the parameter delta, but that's outside of the choice and the constraints.
Now, I have to do one little extra thing. I have to make a time-ordered product. Time-ordered product. So I'm now going to give you the R, which does that. Let's do it between time T1 and T2. And we'll take any two times we like, so long as T2 is greater than T1. And what we'll show is that for any set of times, I will give you a measure which creates such an E. Not hard. It comes in a two-step process. The first step, I'm going to make a Gaussian integral. So I have E to the I integral. Can I set h bar equal to 1 for this part of the calculation? Lambda alpha t, phi alpha dt, and then I make a Gaussian, which is e to the minus I over 4 gamma summation lambda alpha of t squared integral dt. Then I have a integration over the lambda, it's a flat kind of integration, with a suitable measure, with suitable normalization. Now this is no more complicated than a Gaussian integral or the Fourier transform of a Gaussian integral with an imaginary part here. So the answer I choose, and I choose the normalization to get this, is I get a plus I get a gamma upstairs, and then I get a sum on the phi alpha squares. If this integral runs between T1 and T2, T1 and T2, then what I have is an integral over this from T1 to T2, but now the time dependence is all gone, so I simply get, I'll call it delta T. So delta T stands for the difference of the two times, and I want it to be strictly positive. So now I have created this combination. Any question about that? Step one. The next thing I do, I remind you of the following simple Fourier transform. I want to do a Fourier transform. We're leaving operators for the moment. We're just doing a simple classical analysis. I want to integrate between, let us say, minus L and plus L, a unit height function here. And we'll take the Fourier transform of that function. So that is e to the I kx, we'll call that, dx from minus L to L. And I will put my 2 pi nonsense factor in front of that here. That will give me the Fourier transform of that function. Well, that is 1 over 2 pi, I can make twice of those, go from 0 to L, and call that the cosine is the only important part.
So that Fourier transform becomes, well, we can do it right here. We don't have to go very far.
That becomes sine KL over pi times K.
Likewise, if I now take the inverse Fourier transform of that particular function, sine KL over pi K e to the minus I K X dK, running from plus to minus infinity, that will give me my function, let's call it U of X here, U of X. And all the 2 pi nonsense I have put all into this part of the transform. So that will either give me 1 or 0. Hence, I take my second step. So this is step 1. And step 2, I'm going to take e to the I gamma. Oh, maybe I need more space here. E to the I gamma delta t sum phi alpha squared. I'm going to integrate over gamma. It's going to be like the k here. This is an even function, so it doesn't matter what the sign is. I'm going to use sine gamma delta squared divided by pi times delta, no, that's the integration variable, gamma. And that will give me something which is either 1 or 0. When it's 1, it will say that the sum of the phi alpha squareds is less than delta squared. Needed more room. So that's that. But I don't want it to be less than. I don't want to worry what happens at the edge here. I don't want to worry about that. I would like to definitely include the equal sign. So I'm going to make my thing a little bit larger. So I make it a little bit larger than delta. Call that zeta. And then I take the limit as zeta goes to 0 from the plus side. And that will guarantee that I include the equality part. One thing I failed on you, gentlemen. I need a delta t here. I need a delta t inside my sine function. In truth, if this is my integration variable k, then I need a delta t here and I need a delta t here, but they would cancel, so that's okay. So this is my sine function, includes all of that. Now that's true for any delta t. If I repeat this integral many times with step 1 and step 2, then I will create additional projection operators. But e squared equals e, e cubed equals e, etc. Unless I want to put something in between those projection operators. And that's exactly what I want to do. So you recall the quantity we had kind of at the beginning of this study. We had small steps of propagation, projection operators, small steps of propagation, projection operators, all the way to the end, and then the final catch. I want to replace every one of these E's standing here by this integral representation. And then insert the coherent states repeatedly,
and go back to our path integral formulation.
And that's going to look as follows.
So our same star, again, we'll have another alternative expression. Some integration. I'm going to only write down the formal answer that it gives. So here there's no projection, there's no reduction. How do I put it another way? There's no ease left to attack the coherent states. There's no double angle things anymore. The E's have been brought upstairs. So we have the traditional form of the kinematic term. We have the full Hamiltonian. We have our Lagrange multiplier coefficients, function of T, everything's function of T, but I only do this for emphasis, times our C number representatives of the constraint, just like this is the C number representative of the Hamiltonian operator, integral dt, curly dp, curly dq integration, plus our integration over the Lagrange multipliers enough times so that we insert the projection operator E before and after every little infinitesimal time step. So what I'm telling you is there is a formal representation of the propagator living on the physical Hilbert space, which has this functional form. If you look at it from this perspective, the only difference between what I've been talking about and what Fadeev and Popov have been talking about is this single variable R. Remove that R and you have flat measure here. Put in the R and you have a different measure. Well, who permits me to change the measure for the Lagrange multipliers? We know that the measure for the canonical variables is fixed by Liouville, if nobody else. But I assert to you that the measure for the Lagrange multipliers was never God-given. Fadeev chose the flat measure, which enforced the classical constraints. Okay, that's his choice. I choose a different measure, which enforces the quantum constraints. After all, we're doing the quantum theory. I think that has more legitimate. If you do this, you might ask yourself, what is the weight of the measure? If I take the Fadeev prescription, that is huge. Each time slice gives me an infinite weight, and when I multiply it for every time slice, I get infinity. What about the measure for dr of lambda? Well, this formula right here will tell us the answer. This is a prescription that works for any set of constraints you like. Any set of constraints, any set of operators. The answer may be zero over here if the sum does not have anything that lies below delta squared. But let me choose, as an example, I will choose them all identically zero. Every operator to be zero. If those are zero, then that's just e to the zero or unity. And that's evaluating the total weight of the measure dr. If all these operators are zero, then which vectors in the Hilbert space will respect the criterion that zero is less than delta squared? Every vector is happy to say that. So this is the unit operator. Well, take away the fact that these are operators because these used to be operators, and that's the number one, and that means the integral, the norm of that thing, the measure there, is a value 1. That 1, compared to that infinity, creates a great deal of difference. No need to put in auxiliary conditions. Not necessary.
no Fadeev Popov determinant. Not necessary. Ghosts, as our colleagues would like us to use to take care of the Fadeev Popov determinant, not necessary, etc., etc. Just the use of what I would claim are the is an example. There may be other examples which do the same thing, but an example of a proper measure which enforces the constraints, quantum constraints. Okay. This is a good time for asking questions, because that's our story on constrained system quantization. Why is this of potential interest? There's a lot of work, of course, on Yang-Mills theory in quantum field theory. Yang-Mills theory is strictly a first-class system. So these extra features are not essential. But what about quantum gravity? Quantum gravity turns out to be a partially second-class system from the quantum point of view. And so these methods should have direct bearing on the quantum theory of gravity. Yes, question.
On step one, can you please explain how you went from the top line to the bottom line?
Here to here?
Yes.
So the question is, how did I do the Gaussian integral? No?
But go ahead.
Okay. So I have a functions of time here. I'm doing a functional integration. I'm doing the functional Fourier transform, effectively, of that. The time-ordered product permits me to do that integral as if everybody commuted with themselves. And the answer I get is the square of that modulo the gamma factors, which have to be taken care of, integrated from 0, from T1 to T2. T1 to T2. But this no longer depends on time. The time dependence was here only in the lambdas. And so that gives me the delta T in front of that, which I wanted. Further questions, because we're about to leave this subject? We have only 2 minutes left. It's kind of pointless to start a new subject. Next time we get together, we're going to have a little bit on fermion path integrals. That will conclude chapter 6. I'm a little behind in schedule, so I won't have as much time as I hoped for chapter 7, which is quantum field theory, but I will give you an overview. And I do want to get to one topic in chapter 8, which will bring us back to the start of our course, which said that we should never actually calculate an integral. We should find tricky ways to do it for us. And I will show you a set of functional integrals which you can go remarkably far without ever truly evaluating an integral. Okay. See you next time.